Friday. Happy Friday. Welcome to the program. Pete Callender here, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. And thanks a lot for hanging out. I appreciate it. The email is Pete at thepetecallendershow.com, and that's Callender with a K. And you can also hit me up on Twitter at Pete Callender. And in studio with me, I want to welcome to the program Shannon Bray. He is the Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate here in North Carolina. Welcome, Shannon.
Thank you.
And I've got Matthew Ho as well. He is the Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate.
Welcome. Thanks, Pete.
Absolutely. So last night we were at Davidson College, where the Libertarian Party and the Green Party both put on, along with Davidson College. Thanks so much to the college for hosting it, a forum. And you guys participated in the forum, and I was just there kind of ask questions. Great. I thought questions that came from the audience. I actually still have some of their cards here because we didn't get to them all. That was a forum, and I just want to be clear, like, this is a little bit more of a structured debate. We do have a clock to actually keep track of tonight. So, but also I want to, there were some things that you guys said last night that I wanted to kind of focus on a little bit more, because there were things that you agreed on that I think people would be surprised about, but also some disagreements that separate you two from each other, but also from the other folks in the field. Maybe you've heard of the other folks, Ted Budd, the Republican, and Sherry Beasley, the Democrat. They will be debating on Spectrum News. You all were not invited to the debate, but there was a development today. Who would like to take the lead on this? Does it matter? Shannon, you read the email first.
I did.
And he read it correctly.
Matthew apparently did not read it correctly. So what was the email you got today from Spectrum?
Yeah, so this morning I got an email letting me know that Ted and Sherry were debating, and at 7 o'clock, 7 to 9, and that they were inviting me to participate in a pre-debate that would be before it. And in addition to that, they also, I guess to kind of make up for the lack of news coverage, they're offering to have a reporter follow us around and kind of catalog us for a day or so.
A day in the life of a Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate.
Right.
Okay. So what's a pre-debate?
To be honest with you, I think they just got so much pushback, they had to create one. I don't know. I've never actually seen much pre-debates before. I am happy that, you know, they are going to give us a voice, because they've been pretty notorious for keeping us silent. I mean, even with the things that I'm sure we'll talk about with the Green Party and stuff, they're not talking about the actual news. It's like they are, they have a scenario in their head and they are just pushing it out. And it's the duopoly scenario.
The duopoly, two parties.
Yes.
So you read the email. So I guess what Shannon sent you a message or something this morning, because for folks who aren't aware, you two have been communicating with each other for a good bit. You seem to get along, but you're also kind of fighting a similar fight, right, Matthew? Like you're trying to get recognition as I got this term yesterday, and the alternative parties rather right. than third parties, because there are now more than three, right? And you, Matthew, had to deal with this first, getting on the ballot, getting certified as a party, something the Libertarians had to go through for years. They now kind of regularly are on the ballot. Green Party is kind of getting its feet under them. But you had to get recertified. There was a big fight about it. Spectrum gave you coverage for
right.
that.
Right.
You get this message this morning. What, from Shannon? That was the first time you saw there was something brewing?
I just happened to see Shannon's message first, and then I saw the email. And my concern with the day in the life thing is that it doesn't, is that going to let us talk about the issues? Are we going to be able to present our ideas? Or is it just going to be like, oh, you know, Matt lives in Wake Forest. He's got two dogs. He's a disabled Marine combat veteran. Here's a photo of him in uniform from that time. Like, is it going to be like kind of that type of coverage? Or are we going to be given the opportunity, like we had last night with you, Pete Davidson, to talk about our ideas, to talk about the things, the reasons why we're running, who we're running for, what we want to see happen in our communities and in our country? And so I get worried when I see those kind of things, like a day in the life, because it just ends up being something that, because even, you know, take it back to what you're talking about when we had a fight to get on the ballot, and we had, you know, we were in federal court, we were in state court, and had a lot of media coverage, including national media coverage, but it was all about these false allegations of fraud and, you know, our fight against that. It wasn't about, healthcare. It wasn't about housing. It wasn't about the war on drugs, you know. So that's, I think, a real issue for us, is that the issues, I think this is what we talk about when we talk about wanting a multi-party democracy, is going back to issues-based voting, something that I think most people will agree hasn't happened in quite a long time.
So you're not going to be on the debate stage with Budd and Beasley, right? That's my understanding?
No, that's my understanding as well.
Same, yeah, my understanding too.
All right, but they are going to let you be part of sort of, I guess, a pre-debate. And I guess, I have not seen the email, so I don't know if this is the case, but it almost sounds like it's part of their election debate coverage, that they're putting together a pregame show, basically. And here are the they'll probably do one on Budd, they'll probably do one on Beasley, and then they'll do one on each of you. So you'll be part of sort of that pregame show, but not on the field during the game. That's
right.
What it kind of sounds
right.
Like.
Right. Right.
Now you are interested in doing this, right? I hope I'm not trying to like sabotage this for you guys, but you're not going to be on the debate stage.
No, we have to, but we do have to accept whatever media handouts we get, because we just normally get ignored.
Right. And you know, and for me, I know, and I think it's probably the same for Shannon, you know, and other folks running, as an alternative party or an independent candidate or a grassroots campaign, getting into the debates, having public coverage, being able to discuss openly why we're running. Because, you know, if Shannon and I aren't on the debate stage, you know that a lot of the things that we spoke about last night and that we're going to talk about today are not going to be talked about at that debate. Right.
Or in that way.
Right.
Exactly. Even if there's some mention of an overarching topic that is similar, they're not going to talk, because, I mean, I cover politics. I know what their positions are, and they don't talk about those issues the way you guys did last night.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, there was video of the event, and that will be, as I understand it, right, that will be posted at some point. So if people are interested in watching that forum, they will be able to see it at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll get it out. We'll share it with the Libertarian Party and with Davidson and whoever else wants to put it out.
All right. So let's go ahead and take a break. We've got Shannon Bray, Libertarian candidate, Matthew Ho, the Green Party candidate. We'll get into some of the topics for discussion that we kind of touched on, some of them last night, some that we did not. These are my questions, though, now coming in. So like last night was sort of the party's candidate questions and topics. Alrighty, so September is Pediatric Cancer Awareness Month, and it is time now for our third annual WBT Little Heroes Blood Drive. We're doing it on Monday, the 19th. Head on down to the Jack Daniels Doghouse, where the One Blood Big Red Bus is going to help you make a life-saving blood donation. I mean, we're committed to helping kids in the community that are fighting cancer, and you can make a difference. Are you going to help us out? I ask that you do. Also, thanks to Affordable Siding and Windows, Jamison Realty, for their support for the effort. The third annual WBT Little Heroes Blood Drive is at the Doghouse Monday, September 19th. Go to WBT.com for the details and to make your appointment there, which they need on the front end so they can kind of schedule people going in and giving the donation. So thanks for all the help you can provide. We appreciate it. In studio with me is Matthew Ho, the Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate, and Shannon Bray, Libertarian Party candidate for U.S. Senate. Not going to be participating in the debate with the Democrat and Republican candidates because you were not invited. But let me say real quick, and I will say this, you guys don't have to comment, but this is, to quote Donald Trump, rigged. They do not allow people to get on the stage unless they've got a certain percentage of polling. As I understand it, it's 10% you got to get. But how do you get to 10% if you're not getting any of the earned media coverage? And it's a way, to me at least, that it is restricting access to the debate stage, where you might actually be able to articulate your positions and convince people that there are other ideas. My view on it is, if you get certified as a political candidate and party, you should be on the stage. I mean, to me, that's the standard to get over. That's the bar to clear.
We're not even on all the polls, though.
Yeah.
You have to ask for one of us in many of the polls if you want. And oftentimes, they'll try to dissuade you from even the polls. Poll numbers are very important to us because they do help us cross some of those barriers. But the people doing the polls aren't being fair to begin with.
they're not putting you on the, if you don't ask, then you're not going to show up in the polling.
That's right. Yeah. And Shannon's not making it up. Yeah. Like if you, we've been told a number of times that when somebody calls and says, are you interested in voting for Beasley or Budd? And they say, how about Ho or Bray? Like literally the respondent has to ask. It's not offered to them. We're not offered to them as a choice. Like, I mean, so it is. And I think what you just said, Pete, about if you've qualified for the ballot, you should be on the debate stage. The voters should hear all the options. I don't think anyone thinks that's a radical idea. That's not some kind of fringe notion. I think most people walking around out there are going to say, yeah, that makes sense. That kind of fits in line with what we think democracy should be.
They had 16 people in the presidential
stage. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, they were getting 1%. Yeah. Well, and you said something also last night, Matthew, at the forum at Davidson College where, you know, I asked, is this the common argument as well? You're throwing your vote away if you don't vote for one of the major party candidates. And to you, the point that you made last night was that if people go and vote, you're going to get a certain percentage in the vote totals. And that's how the Libertarians end up keep getting on the ballots again, is because they're getting a certain percentage in the results. And if you don't get that, if a Green Party voter, for example, goes to vote and they're like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't vote for Matthew because I Sherry Beasley needs it. And I may not like her on everything, but she's close enough and I don't want to waste my vote, quote unquote. But by doing that, now you're not getting a percentage, which means you're going to have to go fight to get certified again in another 4 years.
Right. And, you know, so we're on the ballot now. We're an established party in North Carolina, the North Carolina Green Party, and keeping that is a priority for us, because just like you said, Pete, if we don't keep it, then we got to go back out there and collect tens of thousands of signatures again. And, you know, I mean, for our campaign, we launched the campaign back in January, and it wasn't until mid-August that we were actually on the ballot. So the first 7 months or so of the campaign, it was just about getting recognized and people who are familiar with our story. We had to go to federal court. We won in federal court. We won in federal appeals court. We had to fight against the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. So Chuck Schumer's group up in Washington, D.C., they came down and fought against us. There's so much to limiting voter options, really voter suppression. Beyond keeping us off the debate stage, it's tying us up in court. It's making us jump through hoops. It's making us use whatever limited resources we have to get on the ballot and then keep our ballot access, as opposed to getting out there and talking about healthcare, housing, jobs, climate, war on drugs, whatever. I mean, because even with all the media attention we had over the summer regarding what we were going through fighting the State Board of Elections and fighting the Democratic Party, you know, the media was about basically, hey, Matt, when did you stop committing fraud? Right. I mean, so it was right. Right. That's what it was. It wasn't like, hey, Matt, rents have gone up 50% across North Carolina last year. What do you think about that? It was, you know, responding to false allegations and smears. So even too, you have this fight where you're trying to have your voice rather than their narrative.
Yeah. And it's a fight I recall. I used to be a registered libertarian like 20 years ago, and it's a fight I recall libertarians constantly having to fight. They're in a better position now, but it took that long, and the amount of resources and manpower necessary to stay on the ballot is a fight that the major parties don't have to worry about anymore. Although, I don't know, I've seen the registration numbers seem to be going in the wrong direction for more unaffiliated.
Yes, but both parties still get federal tax dollars donated to them. Where our campaigns are not.
Mm-hmm. Let's do this. We got to do some news here, and then we'll get into some topics here. We've got Matthew Ho, the Green Party candidate, Shannon Bray, the Libertarian Party candidate for U.S. Senate. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Pete Callender here, along with two candidates for U.S. Senate here in North Carolina. Shannon Bray is the Libertarian, and Matthew Ho is the Green Party candidate. And let's get to some of the issues. So last night at the forum, we discussed the Electoral College. Y'all discussed it, and you both agree you want to abolish the Electoral College. You want to get rid of it. So let me start with you, Shannon. Why would you abolish the Electoral College? And do me a favor, get up closer to that microphone. Yeah.
Well, I feel like it's too easy to manipulate. I would like to see a democratic voting system, because of the way it's weighted with like California and Florida and where people are living and the governments that they're under and how these states are controlled, I just feel like there's too much dirty politics playing the Electoral College. I would like to see it removed. Now, just having straight vote counts, 50-50, may not be the answer, but I just think there's a lot of corruption that we don't necessarily see. In fact, I mean, we all know that politics has corruption in it, but you don't really understand and see it until you're a candidate. So the same thing kind of holds true is when you are a candidate or when you're holding an office, then you start to see the backstory to some of these things. And it's easy to say, okay, you know what? I'll ignore that. If I'm going to be voted back in, or, you know, people sell their souls slowly. The same person that you elect is not the person that leaves that seat. That kind of derailed that whole electoral college.
But you both agree, because Matthew, I think you gave a longer answer, and Shannon agreed with you last night. And you said that the electoral college is racist.
Yeah, I mean, well, it comes from the compromise to keep the slave states in the Union at the founding of this country. So this is fruit from the proverbial poison tree, and so that legacy is still there. And I think anyone who looks at this, regardless of affiliation or background or what have you, is going to say, yeah, we shouldn't be using a system. It's the same thing as why we continue to vote on on election day on the Tuesday. You know, the whole reasons for that in terms of what had to do with the reality of life in the late 18th century had nothing to do with how we live today, what our capabilities are. You know, Thomas Paine said, government is for the living, not the dead. Right. And so this adherence we have to the old ways, just because they're old or because we were taught them when we were in school, doesn't mean that they're a correct way to follow. And I think I think looking at the Electoral College and looking at twice this century, and it's a young century, we've had presidents elected who are not popularly elected. I think people rightly say that that's problematic, you know, to me, it is. There's a heritage to it. There's a legacy to it that is racist. That's tied to the compromise to keep slavery in the slave states in the Union. But more than that, it defies the principle of one person, one vote.
So I agree. It was specifically designed to avoid pure democracy.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's a feature in my view, not a bug. That's that you don't want a pure democracy, because the founders were very concerned about the tyranny of the mob, right? The tyranny of the majority.
Right.
You could essentially rob people of all sorts of rights and privileges just if you get 50% plus one. And that's why they did not.
Democracy.
Yeah. What's that? Yeah. Well, two wolves and a lamb voting on dinner. Right. So like that's
right.
The
right.
That,
yeah.
They did not want that. So why would you get rid of a system that prevents that kind of tyranny?
Because we have other checks and balances. We have the House and the Senate, and we have the judiciary.
But those are all popularly elected as well.
Correct. But not, and this is one of the things that we argue for. And we say that we want to abolish the Electoral College. We're also talking about bringing in other reforms, such as ranked choice voting, proportional representation, to expand voter choice, right? Allow for one of the things that Shannon brought up last night was that, you know, in a U.S. House race, 51 in a race, it's 51 to 49. Those people who are in that 49 percentile, they don't have any representation. And we think that's incorrect. We think that's wrong, that we should go to a proportional representation system where more people are represented in elected office, that you have that check or balance against that tyranny and majority, because you're exactly right. I mean, because we can look through history and see where, and even too, if the structure is not set up in a way that has integrity to it, if it's set up to ensure that the established powers continue to remain the established powers, you can also have a tyranny of the minority. right? Sure. I mean, certainly we've seen that all through our history. So that, I think that's one of the things. And this is why I think people want democracy reform. They want, I think ranked choice voting is becoming more popular, but people also want term limits. They want to get money out of politics, right? And as well, too, I just go back to the fundamental aspect of the Electoral College. It defies the one person, one vote. And as Shannon was saying, you're able to manipulate it, right? The parties, the two major parties are able to game it.
But they would game a popular vote as well. They would simply focus on the largest populated states, which I would also point out just happens to benefit one particular party over the other. Mm-hmm. So even going to you abolish, as what they're trying to do is sort of an end run around actually amending the Constitution to get rid of the Electoral College. They're doing this thing where, you know, all these states will just agree just to basically ignore it. And eventually you'll get to a point where they just elect popular by popular vote the candidate. Well, that would also alienate large portions of the country. It's just a different group that you're alienating, right? I mean, in fact, right, the Electoral College, the idea behind it and steering away from direct democracy is that it's not about equality of the vote, the one person, one vote. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to preserve unalienable rights. That's the purpose. And so you set the rules in place and you prevent the unalienable rights from being attacked because you don't put it up to the whims of the people.
Well, I mean, I think the initial purpose was to ensure that slave states had the power that they wanted, right? This is where the two-thirds.
Otherwise, they would not have joined.
Otherwise, they would not have joined, right?
Right. That's the whole and compromise. Remember the three-fifths compromise, and which is what the Electoral College was based off of, right? That was done specifically because the slave states wanted greater representation. They wanted to count the slaves as full people so they could get more influence, and they wouldn't sign on if they were counted as zero. They wanted all, and so three-fifths was the compromise so as to create the union. So I'm not sure that indicates that the Electoral College is racist or rooted in racism, because the three-fifths compromise was eventually, right, gotten rid of by the very same document that had it in it in the first place.
Yeah, after Civil War.
Sure, right, sure, absolutely. But the founders knew that as well. Yeah. They knew this had to have been settled at some point, but the purpose at hand at the time was we need to govern ourselves first. We need to create this union.
Yeah, I mean, and the what you brought before about this, what the Democratic Party is pushing for Electoral College reform is something that we are not in favor of. This is the National Popular Voting Act, because it has poison pills in it for third parties, just like the John Lewis Voting Reform Act had poison pills in it for third parties and independent candidates, whereas it would have made it harder for third parties and independent candidates to raise funds. So I think what you're saying, Pete, is exactly right, where we have to understand what are the purposes in any of these types of reforms. I think what we're advancing is we want greater democracy. We want a strengthened democracy. We want it to be more inclusive. And we think that Electoral College doesn't provide for that.
No, but because we're a republic. We're a representative republic, right?
Right.
We don't
want
a straight. I mean, I think that's. So I'm a big believer in getting to like the fundamental philosophical core of a policy issue.
Yeah.
And to me, this is it. It's that the system was not designed to be a pure democracy because the founders were very terrified of that. So I'll throw it over to Shannon because he's sitting. I don't know. Are you interested in weighing in, or do you want to go back to Matt?
We can go back to Matt.
Okay.
I don't really have outside just the corruption of politics and the game theory that gets played into it. I mean, I understand why it's important, but it's also a tool that's hurting us. We're hurting us as individuals. So it's something that I think it needs to be redesigned, maybe not abolished, but...
So do you trust people that are corrupting the system now to redesign that system?
No, I don't trust anyone.
Okay, fair enough. All right, we got to go to a break. I'm here with Matthew Ho, he's a Green Party candidate, and Shannon Braid, Libertarian Party candidate for U.S. Senate. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Hanging out with two candidates for U.S. Senate here in North Carolina, Matthew Ho, the Green Party candidate, and Shannon Braid, the Libertarian Party candidate. And next hour, if you've got questions that you would like to have the candidates answer, you can send me an email, pete@thepetecallinershow.com, or if you'd like to call, the numbers are 704-570-1110 or 1-800-WBT-1110, and we'll get to some of your questions in the next hour. One of the other things that y'all agreed on last night during the forum at Davidson College was the question of abortion. And if I remember correctly, you both said no limits on women's reproductive health, right? No limits. So, and I think then there was a follow-up question from the audience about Lindsey Graham's proposal, which, according to Graham, says at 15 weeks, when the baby can feel pain, you provide anesthesia to save its life. If you operate on it, it should be protected from being dismembered by an abortionist. That puts us in line with France, Germany, and Great Britain. They all have abortion bans below 15 weeks. So he's essentially looking to draw a line. And do you oppose drawing any line whatsoever? I just want, like, before we go into, like, the specifics of it, but do you oppose any lines at all?
I do. I oppose the line because I don't believe the federal government has the right to make this decision for someone else.
Does the state?
No. I mean...
At the state level, not the federal level?
No, not state.
So no government?
No government. I don't believe the government... This kind of decision is personal to someone. Their doctor understands... Their family understands. I don't understand. So why would I put laws out there that would stop someone who then could potentially look for a black market way to achieve it, and then that's even worse, right? It's better to have proper medical coverage and do it correctly than use a coat hanger.
So, all right. So then the follow up, and you were shaking your head, Matthew. Yes,
yeah,
you agree.
Complete agreement. Yeah, no, okay. no limits. No, it is up to a woman to decide, and that's it.
So,
and it should be part of, and abortion is healthcare, and it should be covered under, you know, a single payer system as we advocate for.
So to me, the fundamental philosophical question is, when do rights obtain? Right? Because you just said, Shannon, you said the state doesn't have any role in saying anything about the health. But the state does have a compelling interest in protecting inalienable rights, mm-hmm. right? That's what the whole system is founded upon. So when did the rights obtain for that fetus?
At birth.
At birth. So
that's the only way, because with our immigration system, if I was born in Mexico or Sweden, I'm not an American citizen, right? And they can come to the country, the baby is born, and that baby is an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
So our entire citizenship is based off of birth.
But that's okay. So, and do you agree with that as well?
I agree. At birth.
At birth. So, is it then simply a matter of geography? In other words, you can deliver the child half in, half out of the woman's body, and then terminate that child's life at that point?
What's the medical reason? No, I mean, I don't have to be one.
No, because that's a limitation. You said it. So, you're just saying that rights obtain after the body. So, is that after the umbilical cord is cut?
In terms of when does birth occur, I think it's when the baby has fully been birthed.
That's so completely out of the woman's body.
Mother. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
So half in, half out, you can still suck its brains out?
If, you know, I'm not a big fan of hypotheticals like that. Because,
it's not a hypothetical. This I'm testing the boundaries of the limit, right? And that's where, because that's where you find out where the policy can take you to. And I would submit that if you're saying that rights attach at birth, then you need to be very clear as to what rights we're talking about and what birth is defined as. So that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, correct. So when the baby is outside of the mother, when the baby is no longer a part of the mother's body.
So before clipping the umbilical cord or after?
I would assume that would
apply.
If they're still attached, that would mean that their umbilical cord is part of the mother.
So you could fully deliver the baby, kill it, cut the umbilical cord, and that baby didn't have rights.
Yeah, no, you know, this is
what Kermit Gosnell did. So it's not hypothetical. So,
yeah, it is. We had a conversation, you and I, just before we came back on about, you know, if Pete is like, man, this guy, you know, Pete's really giving this guy a hard time, but there's reason for Pete's doing, because you do have to flesh this out.
Right.
Right. And I've never had this question. To put this point, I don't think I've ever heard anyone put this question this way before,
mm-hmm.
right? So it does give you pause as to, because the seriousness of it, even if it is something that you may never encounter in your lifetime. So, you know, it is, as long as if we are saying that birth is where life takes place in the context of abortion, then when the baby is from the mother, the umbilical cord detached, that is when
Rights obtained.
Rights obtained.
Yeah. Okay. And do you agree with that, Shannon? Is that when rights obtain or attach?
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that.
And so are we as a society better off or worse off with allowing babies like that to be disposed of? What does that say about a society that allows a child to be born and simply by way of cutting the cord, now it's...
Well, I think it's a crappy practice. Personally, sure. I'm against abortion, but I'm also against the government dictating what a woman can and can't do.
But the government does dictate what rights are protected by the state. For example, I cannot go and kill you, right? If I kill you, then the state would come and try me, right? It's not you or your estate or your family. You're not trying me. You're not coming after me, right? I mean, maybe in a civil case, but criminally, that's the state that does that. So the state does have a compelling interest in protecting our rights. That's why we created it, right? So if we're saying that we're not going to protect that child until after the umbilical cord is cut, that's when we start protecting that child. What does that say of the society? And I know that's a grand philosophical mm-hmm. question. We'll just leave it there. But I did want to test to see where you guys fall on that, because you did agree on, well, all of it.
Yeah, you know, and I think one of the things when I hear this, for me and for like our platform, we look at the fact that, you know, North Carolina, we have 1,200 infant deaths a year. Mm-hmm. And so I think your point, Pete, about what does it say about our society? Like, how do we actually take care of people? Children, half our school kids qualify for free school lunch. What does it say about our society? I think that is a point that we continue to have to hammer home on this campaign.
All right, more with the candidates up next.